You are entering the MSP Zone, a podcast for the managed services community, covering news, analysis, and interviews from around the globe. Elevate your MSP game by staying in the MSP Zone. And now, your host, Charles Weaver.
Welcome to the MSP Zone, where we talk about all things managed services all the time for 22 years and counting. Today we have a very special guest and a very special topic. We are going to talk about security, cybersecurity for MSPs and for customers, but we're kind of going to take a different angle and approach today with our discussion and our interview, and it's going to be on not so much preventing, although we talk a lot about prevention in the managed services sector here on the program, but we're going to talk about not just prevention, but we're going to talk about preparation for that attack, and including if it's successful, and things that you ought to be doing to prepare for all the elements of an attack. Not just the defensive, you stop the attack, but also the what happens if it was successful. What happens if you think it might have been successful, but you're not sure. All those things we're going to talk about today. And to make all of that really complicated stuff a lot more easy to understand, we're very happy to have from MSP 360, the VP of Product Management, David Gugick, joining the program today. David, did I pronounce your last name right?
You pronounced it perfectly. My dad would be proud.
Okay.
My grandfather might say, you pronounce it a little differently, but, you know, it's an easy name to spell and apparently a very difficult one for many people to pronounce.
Well, check one for the team. Awesome. I'm glad your dad would be proud.
That's a good start, Charles.
I know a lot of people know MSP 360, but there might be some people out there who don't know what you guys are up to out there. Could you give us maybe a high-level overview of MSP 360?
Yep, 30-second overview. Pretty easy to do. If you're not familiar with MSP 360, maybe you know us from our former name, CloudBerry, back in the day. We provide backup services to the MSP community, so we have been for more than a decade in the backup space. Helping MSPs protect their customers, their Windows, Linux, Mac OS. We support a variety of applications, including hosted applications like Microsoft 365 and Google Workspace. But one of the unique value propositions that we provide to our customers is, you know, low-cost, centralized management, but we facilitate that low-cost and high profitability for the MSPs by integrating with public cloud storage vendors. So wherever you are in the world, there is likely a public cloud storage vendor that we support. The big five would be, you know, Amazon's AWS, Wasabi, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud, and Backblaze B2 of regions all over the U.S. And you get to open up your own cloud storage accounts with those vendors directly. And so you're paying the lowest possible price for storage. You're getting your customer data offsite, protected in the cloud. So that's one of the ways we've been really able to help MSPs and also lower their service fees so they can, you know, bill their customers an appropriate amount for the services without overcharging them, without putting themselves in a competitive deal that they might lose, and while maximizing profitability. And most recently in 2021, we've expanded our portfolio of products. So we've released our first RMM tool, our remote monitoring and management tool that allows MSPs to remotely monitor and get alerts and manage remote endpoints, as well as our Connect product, which is our secure remote desktop product for when you have to do unattended administration or you have to do help desk activities and help one of your customers perform a certain task and you need direct access to those machines. So we're kind of in that space now, so we can provide a variety of products to the MSPs. And if you want more information, because we're not going to be really talking about our products here other than this, anybody can head over to msp360.com and all the information is available on the website.
Awesome. Yeah, you guys have been busy, and I know you guys have been around for ages, so that's awesome that you're expanding into tools. All right, so let's dive right in. You guys have obviously, you know, worked a lot with channel partners who are MSPs. But before we really get into the heart of the matter today, give us maybe your perspective on 2021. How did we do from a cyber defensive posture standpoint? And then, you know, what's new or different or noteworthy from 2022, if you can?
I think one thing I like about the MSP community is their continual evaluation of tools out there that help them protect themselves, really, because MSPs are under attack, just like your customers, MSP customers are under attack. So there's a lot of security solutions out there. Sometimes they're referred to as EDR solutions, endpoint detection and response. And so there are a lot of products out there that can do a great job. But the things that we're seeing right now are that the ransomware creators, if you want to call them that, and that's certainly a loose term that I'll talk about a little bit more.
I think a lot of people would have different terms for them, but use creators.
Yeah, I'll just jump ahead and just say, like, when I say creators, I think we think that people that create this malware are often, you know, pretty smart, even though they're doing dastardly deeds, right? But we've seen in 2021 that ransomware has become ransomware as a service, that the people who are creating the various families of ransomware out there are now using services to license and really rent out that ransomware that anybody feels like doing an attack, right? This is kind of dark web, awful stuff. So you no longer have to be smart and create your own malware if you want to try to deploy ransomware and get somebody to bite and hold their data as ransom. You can now just, you know, sign up with a service and say, I want this particular kind of ransomware. And then the service that you're using will probably just get a bite of the apple. So they'll get some of the Bitcoin that's generated. So that's kind of awful. But we see that the ransomware, you know, creators, if we want to call them that, are sort of been in lockstep with us. So as our security solutions improve, they sort of improve their, you know, techniques to avoid detection and things like that. We saw that attacks were up over 100% in 2021 versus 2020, and that they more or less tripled since 2019. So the number of attacks is going up. I think, if I remember correctly, SonicWall had stated in one of their reports recently that there was an estimated 623 million ransomware attacks. Not all successful, obviously, but a lot of them. And we know a lot of these ransomware vendors are getting in through phishing. So whether it's, you know, just kind of a generic phishing attack through email or through text message, or whether it's something like, you know, targeted, you know, spear phishing attacks where they're, you know, using names of people at company to avoid them thinking that it's a phishing attack. They're contacting, you know, Carol in the accounting office and using names that she might be familiar with in order to get her to bite and click on a link or provide some information over the phone. That seems to be how many of the ransomware attacks are successful, through things like targeted phishing.
Yeah.
And then the other awful stuff is that we've all seen this in the last couple of years, is that, you know, it's no longer just we're going to encrypt your data and threaten to throw out the encryption key if you don't pay us the ransom. You know, ransomware, these malware, these bad actors have now, you know, exfiltrating the data, right? So they're stealing data. They're no longer just encrypting machine by machine. They're spreading around a network. They are looking for all the data that they can capture that might be useful to them. They're exfiltrating that data. And this is all done usually before the encryption happens. So before anybody's alerted, the data has already been exfiltrated. And now it's a threat that your IP will be released. And those double extortion threats, you know, from all reports are now turning into, why stop at double when you can do a triple? What does that even mean? These triple extortion threats, they're not only exfiltrating data, but they're sifting through that data. They're actually closely examining it in an effort to send out ransomware requests to people who are a part of that data. A good example of that was a psychotherapy provider that was hit. And obviously they have very detailed, very personal therapy records from all of their patients.
Sure.
And why hit the psychotherapy provider with a ransomware attack when you can also hit all of the patients who maybe have said very private things that they would not want released? So, you know, they're trying to get smarter, because I think, you know, the number of, you know, decryption sites that are out there, the the general, you know, MO from the FBI, if you're in the United States, is that you should not pay ransoms, you know, and nobody really wants to pay them, even though they are paid sometimes. So ransomware creators are looking for other methods to ensure that they're going to get paid.
Yeah.
And it's really, it's a top concern, a security concern. That and targeted phishing are the two major things that most customers worry about from a security perspective. And we often say that, you know, it's not a matter of if you're going to get hit or if one of your customers are going to get hit. It's a matter of when and making sure that you're kind of prepared should that happen.
Well, I think that that's, I mean, you, everything that you say, you know, people listening say, okay, well, that's true. I think the one glimmer of hope is the bad actors are certainly matching our movements. And if they're not a step ahead, then we're in lockstep, right? In terms of if we move, they move, if they move, we move. So I would like to think that we're staying at least somewhat aware of their movements. I would like to talk to you and get your perspective, David, on, okay, the threats are known. I think most of the MSPs, I think we're, the community is doing a pretty good job of getting the information out there about what the reality is. Let's talk about prevention, defense, but also, you know, as I said in the beginning, it's not just about preventing. There's going to be some attacks to get through. I know you've got some things that you want to get through. So I'm going to start off with the cyber incident response plan. Really critical. It's something we really believe in here. Talk to us about why that's different than a standard disaster recovery plan that most MSPs are very familiar with.
Well, it's different because it's more geared to malware and ransomware, but there's certainly going to be a lot of overlap. I mean, we've talked about this even before ransomware was a huge problem, you know, with our customers to make sure that that MSPs fully document their customers' systems, their business critical systems, so they understand, you know, which ones need to be running in order to conduct business, to make sure that they're negotiating their SLAs properly with their customers, that their restore time objectives, that the restore point objectives are all negotiated and then their master service agreement, so there's no misunderstanding when something bad happens, like, you know, a server dying for some reason, motherboard fails, CPU fails, hard drive fails, and things are offline, that everybody is in lockstep with understanding how long it's going to take to get that server up and running. But you can't restore a server. You can't know which systems to restore first unless that process is fully documented. And it's likely, unless you're in like a vertical where you're dealing with sort of like a limited set of you know, hardware and software solutions that you're at the customers you deal with, it's very likely that every customer is going to be a little bit different, and their willingness to be offline and their ability to be offline is going to differ. You may have a mom and pop shop that can afford to not be, you know, up and running a whole day without it impacting their business, but you may have a more transactional customer out there, or maybe a medical supplier that can't have their, you know, their appointment system, their billing system offline, because then they can't have patients. They can't get into that, and then we'd lose a whole day, and that could be really expensive.
So it's really different. I mean, really, that, you know, people always say, well, all MSPs are the same. It's not. I mean, what you said is just so spot on, that the MSPs are different. The customer needs are vastly varied.
Exactly. And I hear it from, you know, customers that we work with, no matter how much we preach about, you know, it's important to know how to do a restore, we'll get questions from customers. Hey, I'm dealing with a critical restore and I don't understand how to do something. And what I always say to that is, do not rely on vendor documentation. It's not that the vendor documentation is bad. It's just that vendor documentation is written in the voice of the vendor, right?
Right.
Usually by people who understand the software pretty well. And until you've gone through it and rewritten those procedures about how to do a file level restore, about how to restore a whole, you know, server, about, you know, and documenting, you know, what systems need what kind of restores, should they need to be restored, and you practiced it, you are going to be in a lot of trouble when it comes time to restore, and it's very likely you will not meet your service level agreements with these customers. And that could be critical for maintaining a customer relationship, right? You don't want to tell your customer you can have them up and running in 2 hours, and then it takes 2 days, because in all likelihood, they're just going to fire you and hire somebody else who they think is more competent. So it's always, you know, a good idea for MSPs to practice. Now, there was going to obviously be a ton of overlap, right? So the procedures for doing a certain type of restore may apply to all of your customers, but you should at least document it, practice it, and have it integrated into a recovery plan for each customer so you know exactly what systems to restore first and how they need to be restored.
Super important. Training, security training specifically. I know that this has in recent years come up as a new revenue item for MSPs to sell security training and awareness. I like that approach. Nothing wrong with making money doing that. But it's also beyond whether you're making money at it. It's also good for you as an MSP. Walk us through your perspective on the state of security training MSPs are giving to their customers.
Well, we know that cybersecurity awareness training is becoming hugely important to deliver. And if you're not in a position to create this training material yourself, there are certainly a lot of third parties that MSPs can be working with who can deliver this training. It's almost going to be a requirement and may already be a requirement if any of your customers are getting cybersecurity insurance that there is training going on. It's important that it's conducted for the safety of your customers and the safety of the MSP because, you know, any kind of breach at a customer is not going to be look great on the MSP. So by and large, everything that we're seeing out there, a majority of these types of ransomware attacks are caused by employee mistakes and things like distractions, especially from home, usually through things like spear phishing attacks. I think it's really important that MSPs conduct regularly scheduled training. And most of the MSPs I'm speaking to now have started to do that. This was something pretty new in 2021 to have this integrated into their services so they can make sure that new customers are fully trained, that as these customers onboard new employees that they're trained, that every year maybe there's things going on. They may be conducting organization-wide phishing tests. These are the kind of things that employees hate more often because a lot of employees I've seen kind of sadly will notify their employees that there's going to be some phishing tests going on.
I never get that. Like, why give them the heads up? Right.
They do, and I don't know why. It's the idea isn't that you want to catch your employees doing something bad to berate them and embarrass them. It's that you want to educate them. So there are a lot of free tools out there. There are paid, you know, products out there that can do phishing simulations that you can be very generic or you can do more targeted stuff in an effort to try to expose vulnerabilities maybe in the training of the employees or the customers that you work with. So that's important as well. But even doing things like helping employees with their password and credential management. I mean, I hate to say it, but I see this all the time with my friends who are not in IT, but what I call the post-it note password management solution is still alive and well. It seems kind of ridiculous given the number of services that are out there. For companies to use password management services. And I know a lot of MSPs use them, but it's important that employees know how to use the software and that they use it, right? Nobody should know their passwords. They should be in credential databases behind just one password that they need to remember. So they need to have these solutions. And I think if MSPs aren't offering them, they're doing themselves a disservice because they're inevitably going to force employees to use passwords that are very similar if they do password rotation, and password rotation has been largely proven to be ineffective. It's much better to have a very long, complicated password or passphrase, even if it's a sentence that you can remember. But if you're using a password management product, they can generate long, random passwords. You never need to know what they are. They're always in the tool and out of your direct knowledge. And that can help a lot. Yeah. The other things we talk about are like using your work laptops for work, you know, try to avoid personal use of work laptops. I don't know that that's reasonable. Also, what I see is that a lot of work laptops are used for personal stuff, but make sure that, you know, if they need to be on the VPN, they're through the VPN, or make sure they're always on the VPN if you want a little more control. And especially with all the folks working at home, and making sure like home routers are configured correctly. This is like a huge, you know, least common denominator. You know, you work to harden the network at your customers, you know, at their offices. It's great. You control the hardware, and then they get all these employees working from home, connecting through VPNs. And are they on networks that are using, you know, good security? Do they have things like universal plug and play enabled when they shouldn't? Are they using a router they bought at the store and they have remote router administration enabled? Or, you know, is their firmware not even up to date, or is the router not even supported anymore?
Easy, you know, stuff. So I mean, easy preventable stuff, what you're saying.
Preventable if the questions are asked, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, a lot of times you get routers from, you know, your ISPs, and that's fine. We'd like to assume that they're updated, maybe not, but, you know, you can always add an additional router to a home network, plug it into the ISP's router if you want an added level of control over it. And home routers are not too expensive. And if, you know, MSPs are in a good position to recommend hardware and get things set up for anybody who's working from home. So those are the kind of things that, you know, we talk about from a training perspective. And I think most MSPs are moving into the training area, even if they're not doing it themselves, but there might be money to be made if they are delivering the training themselves. So it's something that MSP should definitely consider if they're currently outsourcing it, maybe bringing it in-house.
Yeah. We got to talk about backup. I mean, backup is obviously a still very important, legitimate, important, not just for business continuity, but now for security. So what maybe don't MSPs routinely or customers routinely think about when it comes to backup as a security defensive mechanism?
I think MSPs by and large are pretty good. I mean, I could tell you that when I joined MSP 360 about 5 years ago and we spoke to MSPs, and we did our annual surveys, only about 80% of them that were in the services area were selling backup services. That means, you know, 20% of customers were declining the service. That was partly because the MSP may have been offering a service that was just too expensive for some customers. Mm-hmm. We don't really, or that customers were unaware of the importance of backup. I think, you know, with ransomware out there, with it being in the mainstream news, you read about it, Colonial Pipeline, MSPs being hit, MSP-related software being targeted, because why target an individual customer when you can target software that has access to 1,000 different customers, right? I think customers out there are aware, right? You know, even if they're in a vertical like the dental industry that had been hit, you know, a couple of years ago, they're aware that of the risks. So I think because customers are more aware, they're more likely to buy backup services, and that's what we've seen. You know, backup services used to be at a level below things like security and RMM, right? You know, security was always up there. Now we see them, it's a top tier service. Almost everybody is able to sell backup services. And every customer is buying it. And a lot of MSPs will not even work with customers who say, I refuse to pay for backup. I don't think it's important, because it's a risk for the MSP.
Sure.
And yeah. And we talk about the same stuff that we've always talked about, you know, things like 3-2-1 backups, this concept that's been around probably longer than I've been alive. The idea that you're going to have, you know, three copies of your customer data, the live data, and two backup copies. And one of those backup copies, you know, should be offsite. Traditionally, this might have been tape back in the day when, you know, they were talking about this offsite protection. Now, you know, because tape is fully air gapped, now your quote unquote, I'm doing a little air quotes in the air gap solution is really the cloud. The benefit of the cloud is that, you know, it's accessed through a different API than your NAS that's on your network. So if ransomware or really any malware gets on your network and it starts to do some harm, it's going to see your local backup data. So you should have local backup data, because local backup data is fast to restore, but you should have data offsite somewhere. And really the public cloud, or if you're using different solutions, private cloud, you know, has been a good solution for that. especially with features that have been added to public clouds like immutability, sometimes called object lock, or, you know, worm write once, read many. There are options now with cloud storage that allow you to effectively put a time lock on the data. So should some bad actor get access to the account or the software that manages the backups, and they try to delete the backups, which is something that ransomware tries to do, because if you don't have backups to restore, you're going to be more likely to pay the ransom. This cloud immutability effectively locks anybody out from deleting. It's like a time lock on a vault. You can't delete that data until a certain time has passed, which is can be managed automatically by the backup software. And the other stuff we talk about, and I won't mention it again because we already talked about it, making sure that, you know, you establish your restore point objectives and your restore time objectives with your customers. You know, if your customer says, I can't lose more than 15 minutes worth of data, I guess I am talking about it again. See what happens?
No, it's fine. It's important.
You know, on their SQL server, then you make sure you run transaction log backups every 15 minutes to make sure that you can minimize the amount of data loss. If they say I can't be down more than 2 hours if you need to restore a system, then you need to make sure that with whatever software you're using to support them, you can restore an entire system in 2 hours. And if you can't, that they're aware of that. If your restore time, you know, it can only be done in 4 hours, that has to be explained to your customers in advance. And then they can make the decision about whether or not to go ahead with the contract. So, you know, we talked about, you know, testing your backups and restores, documenting stuff. That's the stuff we talked about earlier. And don't be afraid to use more than one solution. And I don't think MSPs are. I mean, I hear this from MSPs all the time. They might use one solution for certain types of customers that need, say, certain features like business continuity. But for other customers or other servers or endpoints that they're managing out there that don't need those types of features, they may use a different solution. So, you know, don't be afraid to use more than one solution to satisfy the requirements of your customers and to minimize your cost, your customers' costs, and, you know, maximize profit as a result.
Yeah, I think everything that you're saying just screams to me that every MSP is going to have a very different conversation and strategy planning session with their customer, with each customer. And that's what, you know, for all the MSPs who think that they're, you know, that they're commoditized, which I don't know if all MSPs think that. I certainly have heard that argument. I think it's rubbish, because what you said proves how different and unique and kind of special in a good way every MSP relationship is. And all these strategy points that you've articulated are fantastic, but they're not cookie cutter. By any stretch, they're not cookie cutter.
No. No, and you know, I like, you know, I'm an engineer by education, right? And, you know, I've been in software development and database design. So I think I'm, even though I'm in product management now, I'm a pretty technical person. I love reading the articles, you know, about these companies like, you know, Akamai's analysis of Conti's ransomware, or like the DFIR report, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing them right, that did a whole analysis of, you know, quantum ransomware. There are companies out there that kind of pick apart these ransomware products and sort of like create flowcharts about how, what they do, how they obfuscate, how they propagate, the techniques that they're using. I find this stuff sort of fascinating from a forensics perspective, because it's sort of interesting. There's a lot of good YouTube channels out there that you can certainly watch to see this stuff done in real time, this analysis. But I think as a Windows user, I find it a little terrifying as well to see exactly what they're doing. So it's, you know, you can be sort of wowed at the technology that's being employed to do something bad. And then when you just step back, you're like, holy cows, this stuff is seriously dangerous. And not only must MSPs protect themselves and their customers, they need to be ready. And that's what we're finding. As we talk to more and more MSPs, we're hearing more and more that they've had a customer, sometimes more than one customer, that was hit by something like ransomware, and they had to go through, you know, a fairly extensive restore. I mean, the story I used to tell, I know we're getting low on time, so I'll tell it very quickly. This happened like 3 years ago. I have a good friend of mine who's in the dental industry. She's a dental hygienist. She was, you know, surfing between many dentists at the time. She called me up one day because, like, I'm her friend technical support person. And she's like, David, I don't know what's going on. We can't access any of our patient records. And well, there's this weird message on the screen. Of course, it was a ransomware message. Nobody knew what Bitcoin was there. And they were hit by ransomware. And their MSP, who was offering backup services, wasn't requiring it by their customers. So this dentist did not even have backup services. So they had no backups. They lost all their patient records. They ended up paying the ransom because it was 3.5 years ago, I guess now. And ransoms were much cheaper back then. I think it was probably less than $500, which we don't see anymore.
Yeah.
You know, now they're 10, 100 times that. And they were able to get their system up and running again in about a day and a half, 2 days. But it was the MSP got fired. That was the weird thing about it, is that even though the MSP was not requiring backup services and the customer didn't want it, they still lost the business because who's the expert, right? The MSP is the expert. You bring your car in to get repaired, right? And, you know, you want your mechanic to tell you, hey, by the way, you know, your brakes are really bad and you have to put new pads on.
It's right? Like firing your doctor because you don't follow their advice.
I'm not going to work on your car unless you do that. It's too dangerous. And I think MSPs need to be very careful, especially about customers who maybe are penny pinching.
Yeah.
And don't want to pay for certain services because there is a risk to the MSP should something bad happen. Certainly, you know, reputational risk.
Well, that's a horrifying story. It's definitely not something that I would wish on any MSP. We are unfortunately out of time, but David, thank you very much for kind of going through that list and your perspective on all this, and really appreciate what you guys at MSP 360 are doing. And if MSPs out there listening to this say, hey, I want to learn more, what's the best way to reach out and find out more about you guys?
Yeah, a couple of things. If you want to read more about us or try any of our software, just go to MSP360.com. Pretty easy. And if you're interested in reading more about what you can do about protecting yourself from things like ransomware, there's a ton of great resources out there, especially from the U.S. federal government. There's the CISA, which is the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency, Security Agency, which is CISA.gov, has some great sites. The NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards and is it Standards and Technology?
I think that's right.
They have some great resources out there. NIST.gov. There's free phishing simulators. If you're using Microsoft 365, see what they're offering now. There's ransomware decryptor sites out there that have a ton of decryptors. Make a list of this stuff. Put it in your arsenal of information you have. So should you have a customer that's attacked successfully, you know exactly where to look to try to, you know, remedy this yourself as quickly as possible.
Yeah. No, just be aware, be educated, practice and prepare, and all good advice. David Gugick, glad I pronounced that correctly. Thank you very much for your time and your expertise and everything you do to help out the community. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Charles. Great to be here.
And hope you guys out there enjoyed the conversation. If you want to learn more about MSP 360, go check them out. And yeah, hope you guys are staying safe. Until next time.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a like. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast so you'll get notified when future episodes are released. We will see you next time in the MSP Zone.